Welcome to Beyond the Shelf. I'm Scott Curry with Chef's Best. We gather to talk about the trends in marketing, retail, and production in food and beverage that are shaping the industry. Joining us today is entrepreneur Genevieve Brazelton. Genevieve is co-founder and CMO of The Bitter Housewife. The Bitter Housewife makes small batch bitters handcrafted in Portland, Oregon. Genevieve, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Scott. Happy to be here.
It's our pleasure. We love having entrepreneurs on that are having success. And in your instance, you're having quite a lot of success after almost 10 years of founding the Bitter Housewife. So take us back a little bit. You started a company, said almost 10 years ago, which appeared to maybe be perfect timing for what we kind of call the craft cocktail era. Tell us how you began and, do you anticipate that so many people would embrace the art of cocktails? And tell us about that timing.
Yeah, it definitely, well, the kernel of the idea kind of started about 10 years ago, but it was the beginning of the craft cocktail movement, and that was what, started it in terms of I was working as a bar manager at the time in San Francisco, and we were doing seasonal cocktail menus, looking at, what produce was on hand, what did we want to highlight, making a lot of our own syrups and infusions and that kind of thing. And the seed was planted that I wanted to try to make bitters. And I actually never got around to it while I was at that restaurant, while I was behind the bar. But a year or two later, I was writing a blog that I kind of had notions of turning into a lifestyle entertaining blog. And I made bitters as a project to write about, because that I still was very interested. I had no other intentions than just content for the blog. But it turns out that homemade bitters are pretty good. And I was really amazed at not only what went into them, but how much better they tasted than the Angostura that I was used to. So that really got me motivated to fine-tune the recipe and make what I thought would be the best bitters for an old-fashioned, which is my favorite drink. And it was my husband who actually suggested that, what would it look like to make a business out of making bitters? And I said, I have no idea, but we should call it The Bitter Housewife. And That was enough. A quick Google search, and surprisingly, no one had taken it. So we snagged it, and then started looking at what would a business like this look like? How much competition was there? What kind of sales were people having? Was it something that actually was a worthwhile endeavor? And I think you're right. It was right at the beginning, and people were starting to pay attention to the ingredients that were going into their cocktails. And I think a lot of folks weren't really bringing it home yet, but there was definitely an interest in small batch of everything, of handcrafted whiskeys and gins and the actually making syrups and infusions and fresh pressed juices for cocktails. And then it carried over into bitters and, even making your own tonic water and all that kind of stuff. So it was a lot of fun. And it was, I think, then eventually did, go mainstream too, in terms of people wanting to then bring that same experience home.
And how long did it take when you're experimenting in your kitchen, as many food and beverage entrepreneurs start with? How long did it take for you to go from, I'm not even sure if I would call that conception of idea, because you were just hobbying at that point. But when you said, there could be a business here, how long did that process take I can only imagine, right? Finding distribution, manufacturers, et cetera, to the point that you said, I've got a business and it is running now.
That's a good question. Yeah. Cause I think there are many in between stages that you're like, well, were we a business then? Were we really, you know, a viable thing? But I would say it took us, about 2 years before we had a product that was fully licensed and on a shelf that we were selling other than to just friends and family. It's still, I think, questionable whether we really had a business then or whether we were still just in concept phase and trying to prove that there was a demand. But I think after that point, and that was late 2014, within a year to a year and a half, my husband was full time in the business and I was getting really close to being full time in the business. And I think the demand for the product and the response from people, was much more encouraging, I think, than we expected. So, the long-winded answer, I'd say probably 2 years until we were, you know, an official business, and then another year before it felt like we had something that we were invested in and really wanted to keep going.
I mean, you talk about market size there. That must have been part of your decision process, because if we look at, you know, craft cocktails are obviously very popular right now, whether at home or at restaurants or, you know, increasingly bars and restaurants that specialize in craft cocktails. I have to think that it had perhaps been decades since another company had entered the bitters market, right? I mean, it just, I'll avoid dating myself here, but in my 20s and whatnot, I mean, it was gin and tonics, right? It was rum and cokes. There was just none of this appreciation for small batch, for, you know, truly trying to craft something interesting. That's obviously changed. And, you know, whether or not we'll get into maybe a little bit more about what has led those trends, but I have to think that the bitters market, when you started, the total addressable market was fairly small. Yet it's grown probably at the perfect time for you. So I know that this was a little bit on a whim, if you will. You know, you were just kind of playing around. Next thing you know, you had a business. But did you give that any consideration, as I'm sure you had to at least have some investments up front of your own personal capital?
Yeah, we certainly did. And I think what we looked at first was, you know, the obvious. If you asked anybody if they knew what bitters were and they said yes, the brands that they knew at that point in time were Angostura and Fee Brothers. And so we, you know, Angostura is a public company, so we were able to see their sales numbers. And figured if, you know, we could even just get 1% of that, we had, we definitely had a viable business. But then as we dug deeper, we realized that while there wasn't a lot of craft bitters on the market, there was a handful. Each region kind of seemed to have one or two players, fairly well-known bartenders that had decided to start selling bitters. And this kind of played into some of our branding and the way that we marketed it, but it very much seemed as though they were all still bartending. So we're like, well, I don't know. They're maybe not really making any money yet, but they think there's something there. And as you saw the movement start to progress, there were other ingredients too, I think, that really showed us that people wanted to make drinks at home. People, you know, margarita mix has been around forever and Bloody Mary mix. But people were starting to say, oh, I want an organic version of that. I want one that's not full of preservatives. I want, you know, I like the local brand. I want something that, you know, I can relate to who's making it and kind of the story behind it. So that it was also encouraging in that we saw it kind of as right now there was enough of a market that we could potentially make a business, but it really seemed to be pointing toward the fact that it was only going to gain momentum.
Mm-hmm. Let's address the elephant in my room. What are bitters? I think most of us have no idea. We've had them. It's always seemed like an awkward name to me. Bitters, you know, the kind of the plural. It's plural, I think. I don't know. So enlighten me.
Of course, happy to do it because that is one of my favorite parts of the job. Is I love that question of, you know, what are they, or, you know, I've never had them, and I often ask the person, well, have you ever had an old fashioned or a Manhattan? And if they say yes, like, you have had bitters, you just didn't know it. So bitters, in the simplest sense, are an extract or a tincture. And actually, according to the FDA, we are treated very much like vanilla extract. And that's often how, you know, I kind of start to describe the idea. But instead of just one concentrated flavor that you would add to something, it is a mixture of flavors. So we are making an extract out of botanicals. There are roots, there's dried leaves, there's dried fruit, fresh fruit, flowers even, and we make a mash of all of those and pull out all of the flavor into a concentrated alcohol that you then just use a few drops of to add flavor to your cocktails, your non-alcoholic drinks. You can even use bitters in cooking and baking. And then how they really kind of work in a cocktail is I like to say they're your spice rack. A few dashes add depth and interest to your cocktail, and they bring all of the flavors together. They are the seasoning. They are not the main focus of a cocktail. The analogy that I often use is making tomato soup. You know, toward the end of you've cooked down the tomatoes and had your onions and your garlic, then you add dried basil. The soup is not about the basil, but if you didn't have it, that soup would fall flat and the tomato wouldn't seem quite as sweet and vibrant, and you would definitely miss it. Bitters are your basil. They are the thing that adds just that little bit of extra interest and harmony to all the other ingredients in a cocktail.
So it's interesting. I didn't know that. I thought there may be a specific recipe, if you will, for bitters, but there's a wide spectrum there, it sounds like, of different
definitely
flavors, yeah. Botanical ingredients, barks, you know, all that you know, you can play with, if you will, to determine how you want your bitters to taste. So that must have been quite a fun process for you.
Yeah. And I mean, there are, I think that the only maybe kind of rules of making a bitters is that they have at least one ingredient, if not a couple ingredients, that are the bittering agent, are the thing that makes it really bitter. And then they have most likely a couple of other ingredients that are the flavor, you know. So we have 7 different bitters that we make right now. And I think the easiest one to kind of break down is orange bitters. It is all about orange. And the main ingredient is fresh orange peel. But to highlight the orange peel, we add a little bit of cardamom and Earl Grey tea and allspice, because those flavors go really well together and make it just a little bit more interesting. And then to make it a bitter, we use two ingredients, gentian, which is an alpine root that you will often see in a lot of European liquors. They make aperitifs and digestifs that are just based off of gentian that you would actually drink by the ounce or two, as opposed to just a few dashes. And then quassia is the other one that we use most frequently, which is the stem of a South American bush that is also often used to treat digestion issues in more traditional medicine. So we have our roots actually in herbal medicine and patent medicine, even in the United States, is what they called it. So
I love it. At some point you said we need some, and I'm going to butcher this name, but guacha. Well, where are we going to get that, honey? Well, a root in South America. You mentioned, you know, I think any of us that watch some maybe period ever era movie or TV show hears bitters as a pharmacological remedy, but I think there's enough medical advice out there on the internet these days that we'll skip that. But this is all certainly making me want a cocktail, and also realizing I have to step up my game that I don't have bitters in the home. But one way that I'm interested is through your bitters soda products. Mm-hmm. You know, you have various flavors such as grapefruit and orange, and timing again for you here, right? Because the hard seltzer category has seen some pretty explosive growth in the past few years. And so talk about that decision process for expanding the product line and what you consider along the way. I got to think that was probably a pretty big step. You had something that was dialed in, successful. We talked about the market, how I love hearing, hey, if we could just get 1% of that market, then you'd be successful. But next thing you know, much like practically any company, I think at this point, that is, you know, in the alcohol or alcohol adjacent category has considered the soda market. In a year and a half, I think the shelves have gone from maybe four options to, I don't know, 20. I know that the place I frequent, every time I go in there, there's more. So everyone's in that market. It's, instantly fractured almost. So how did you, make that decision, considering you had to start learning about canning and seltzer water and who knows what else, that you put in there? But yeah, Probably a pretty big critical step for your company to make that decision.
Yeah, it was for multiple reasons, but most of it being that it was an entirely different not entirely, but 90% different process, yes, and different equipment needed. And so it's like, is this what we want to do? But it came, but it also seemed, it did seem really natural and logical also. Bitters and soda is first a product that we actually had thought about for a long time, but didn't go down that path because we weren't sure there was a market for it. And it was a very different process. But we drink bitters and soda at home all the time when we're not drinking. It's kind of the non-alcoholic cocktail. It feels like a cocktail. You sip it slowly. But it has trace amounts of alcohol. You couldn't drink enough of it, fast enough to feel any effects whatsoever. And it was also it's the thing that you, at least people in the restaurant industry, you have a hangover, you've got an upset stomach, have some bitters and soda. It solved everything. So a product that, you know, we were very familiar with. But as we were talking to our customers and learning about them and how they used our bitters and, you know, what flavors they liked, in more recent years, we were hearing more and more frequently that people were buying our bitters just for soda water. You know, I had a woman tell me that she carried at least about one or two bottles around in her purse with her at all times so that she could have bitters and soda at work. She could make her own at the restaurant if they didn't have the bitters that she wanted. And, you know, I mean, that was like, oh, okay. So this is a thing that is beyond just the restaurant industry and the people who work behind the bar. And at that, you know, same time, we were starting to, well, not starting, you're hearing more and more about Dry January and people taking a break from alcohol for, you know, paleo and Whole 30 or just because, you know, there was a growing awareness of moderation in alcohol and taking a break and not wanting it all the time. And then, but what do you drink instead when you want to be social, when you want to have that moment at the end of the day where you're kind of signaling, you know, I'm done with work and I'm shifting to friends and family. And there weren't a lot of options. So we fit into this growing now non-alcoholic space. And we actually, with the bitters and soda, are 100% alcohol-free. There is not even a trace. We came up with a proprietary process to make the base bitters with absolutely no alcohol. It also has absolutely no sugar. So now we kind of find ourselves in a little bit of that, you know, better for you soda, healthy beverage category. I wouldn't quite call us functional, but we are definitely the healthy option, which is, you know, so we straddle the craft cocktails and the healthy beverage space, which is in and of itself a weird place to be. But once we launched that and we started getting orders, we quickly saw that is where the company is going to grow. Cocktail bitters, while you could make a very decent business out of it, is always going to be a niche product. And part of that is just because, you know, even a aggressive consumer is maybe going through one or two bottles a month. But the bitters and soda is something that we've got subscribers that are going through, you know, 24 cans a month or some even more frequently than that. Yeah, exactly. It has velocity that bitters will never have. So that's, you know, that's how we see the company growing. And, you know, it may lead to other canned beverages. But right now, yeah, we have three flavors of the bitters and soda and adding a fourth, hopefully in the next month or so. Still waiting on cans to arrive, the ever present issue of enough can supply. So
I love how you kind of describe the category, and inherent in that is you start realizing how alcohol is part of our social fabric. It's part of our routines. It's our rituals. And you said you have Dry January, you have Sober October. Mm-hmm. My wife and I happen to be hitting the end here of I guess we're calling it a Sober September. Yet, you know, we're sitting down watching, we both went to Penn State University. So big football game was on, and end of the night, we had it recorded so we could watch it, and kids are finally in bed, and you know, I wanted a drink. Not just to be clear, because I think it's pointed. It wasn't I need a drink type thing, but it's just part of the routine of okay, the evening is over, the kids are sleeping, hopefully, and what can I have right now? I don't want water, but I found myself struggling because it's like, what am I going to do? Pour apple juice? You know, you're looking for something that just has a little more texture, some aroma to it, just something that just is part. It's difficult to describe, but it makes sense when you realize it, that you don't just want to pour yourself a lemonade, that there's a tradition, these traditions that we have. So it's wonderful to hear that there's, you know, there's options out there for folks that for whatever reason, with pregnancy or health reasons or any other reason, you know, you're choosing to not imbibe in alcohol, that there's an option out there other than Kool-Aid or the children's apple juice or something like that. As someone that doesn't personally, you know, I don't drink, you know, soda pop or anything like that.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, that's what we found once we got the product on the market and really started talking to the people who were buying it. You know, what are you using this for? How does it fit into your life? And it turns out that most of our customers do drink alcohol on occasion. You know, they love a glass of wine, you know, on the weekends with a dinner, they whatever, still make themselves old fashions and Manhattans at home. But this fit a place in their life that nothing else did. And it was very much that they wanted something that fit that ritual of having a drink that felt special. I heard a lot of people say that made you sip it, that made you slow down. I think that, you know, that's part of the bitter nature. You think of a cocktail and you don't, I mean, most cocktails at least, you don't just drink fast like a glass of lemonade, you know, because it's actually hard. It's a little challenging to do that. So you want something that slows you down. But what fits that hole that doesn't have alcohol? And so bitters and soda, I think is, you know, there are other options now out there. And I love that it's a growing category, because honestly, if there's more and it's more easily defined for customers, then it's easier for us to sell it to them. It's easier for us to explain what we are and how we fit into their lives. Mm-hmm. It's by no means crowded yet.
Yeah. And it's definitely some behavioral characteristics there. It's interesting you note that. It's the sipping. It slows you down while also, I suppose, keeping you active a little bit, right? It's just that, again, you're sitting there, you're watching a game. It's just something to move your hand around, right? To raise to your mouth, place it back down. Kind of that, it's slowing you down while also keeping you a little active, maybe burning off a little anxious energy as well. And I think that applies to social situations too, right? I think if you've ever gone to a networking event, a wedding, a party, or something like that, where you're not consuming alcohol, to stand there just with your hands doing nothing, you feel awkward, right? You don't know where to put them. Whereas having them in something in your hands to, you know, gesture with, and you know, kind of when you complete your sentence, you bring it up to your mouth, which is a social cue to the other individual that it's their turn to talk. You know, there's definitely a lot of behavioral characteristics there.
There are, yeah. And we are, I mean, there are, that was one of the things as we, you know, kind of looked into this, there are so many more occasions now to have a beverage of some sort. You know, you go and have coffee with friends. You have an afternoon drink, you have, you know, your happy hour drink, there's the drink after dinner, there's, you know, there are so many different occasions. Brunch is a whole nother thing. But if you don't want alcohol and you don't want coffee, there are not a lot of options. And the ones that are there are often full of sugar. So there is a burgeoning category of, you know, adult non-alcoholic beverages, I think, you know, for lack of a better terms. They are bitter. They are not sweet. They are layered and complex, and they fit that craving kind of, you know, that you do want something that kind of is a little challenging for your palate. But they also satisfy that. Yeah, I've got that beverage. I'm participating in whatever this social interaction is too. Mm-hmm.
So speaking of social kind of interactions, you and your husband, your co-founders of the company, trying to discern who pulled who into this. I think he might have pulled you into it a little bit. I imagine this puts you together pretty much 24/7, right? You're not only together 24/7, but I would wager you're making 50 decisions together every day as well. How did you approach that? Because there's a lot of husband and wife entrepreneurs out there. I think we might only meet the ones that are successful with the venture. Did you set any ground rules before? You know, what have you learned? What advice would you have for any couple considering this path?
Yeah. We didn't really set ground rules in the beginning because this business actually started to take shape very early in our relationship. It actually started taking shape about the same time that we were planning our wedding. Or maybe right after. I honestly forget all of the timing, but
So you were the bitter spouse.
Yes.
Bitter girlfriend or the bitter fiance that graduated to the bitter housewife.
Yeah. You know, it definitely, we started our relationship, I think, a bit with that idea, and not so much that idea, but that was a part of the fabric of our relationship from the beginning. My husband, when I met him, when we first started dating, was running a technology startup in in San Francisco. And I had 3 or 4 different jobs doing some freelance stuff, trying to start my own thing, as well as, you know, working in the restaurant industry. So we were both very entrepreneurial to begin with, and we both took an interest in what the other one was doing. And I think as, you know, the relationship started, we also were both not particularly happy in the paths that we were on. So we were both searching for something else. We didn't actively look for something together, but when it presented itself, I didn't give it a second thought that going into business with him was a bad idea or that it was something that wasn't normal. You know, I honestly really didn't. It was like, oh, yeah, we get along. We like this. This idea makes sense. We can talk to each other. Sure. Why wouldn't we do this? But I do think, you know, as we've progressed in our relationship and the business, and now we have a 7-year-old son, you know, it's like all of these things together all the time, you do have to have some rules. And I think ultimately having the business has probably made our relationship stronger because there is no place to get away from the argument. You know, if we're having a personal argument, you don't get to go to work and just ignore that person. And if you're having a conflict about decisions at work, you can't come home and forget about it because you're always there, you're always together. So we have to talk about things and we have to deal with them, which I think is good because I naturally avoid the things that make me uncomfortable. So
the old 24-hour rule of giving you time to cool off, you're like, I can't, he's sleeping next to me.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like, yeah. All right, I guess, okay, give me, you know, I'm going to take my 15 minutes, get my thoughts together and okay, let's just get this over with and figure this out so we can move forward and, you know, on with all the rest of the stuff. So, you know, I ultimately think it's great, but I think it, you know, it depends on the people and it depends on how you communicate. Dan and I are also very different people, which I think is a benefit to us. You know, he is a jump off the cliff and build the plane while you're falling type of person. And I need 10 different versions of what the plane's going to look like before I put the first two pieces together. So, you know, we find this middle ground where I pull him back and he, you know, makes me do things that I'm maybe not quite ready to do, but we figure it out together. So, yeah, I think it's, you know, that is also something that not every couple could do.
I can relate. Let's just leave it there. Well, it sounds like that it's only nurtured a healthier relationship, which is wonderful to hear. We'll check back in 10 years to see if the bitter meter, the housewife bitter meter is any higher.
But, right.
It's wonderful to hear of the success and congratulations on having a child along the way of that success as well. Let's talk about where we can find your products. So
yeah,
you have thebitterhousewife.com. Mm-hmm. You can purchase directly on there. There's all sorts of different payment options. You got cocktail bitters full set. Got to recommend that. It has the old fashioned, aromatic, the cardamom, orange, grapefruit, lime, coriander, barrel aged bitters. It's got them all right there. Tell us about retail as well.
Yeah, well, we're available in almost all 50 states in at least one or two gift or specialty food shops. We do have a pretty decent map locator on store locator on our website. So check that out. And then we're most widely distributed in the Pacific Northwest since we're based here in Portland, Oregon. So you can locally find us in New Seasons Market of Choice up in Washington. We are in Safeway, handful of liquor stores across both states. But I think it's the best place to find us is if there is that little, you know, little specialty food or gift shop that has a decent cocktail section. There's a good chance we're there. And if we're not there, tell them that they should have a Bitter Housewife and we'll happily get them set up. So.
Awesome. Well, you've got wonderful branding too. Obviously the Bitter Housewife is playful in nature with the name there. But just overall branding, you've got this kind of classic yet contemporary look to everything. If that makes any sense at all, if it doesn't make sense, go find a bottle, visit the website or social media. You can find on Facebook and Instagram at the Bitter Housewife as well. Well, Genevieve, thank you very much for coming on and sharing your story.
Of course.
It's one of success, and I think that success is very cool to hear that it extends in your personal relationship as well, only strengthening it there. But just a great story of kind of seeing a need, playing around, turning it into a hobby, turning it into a business in air quotes, and then turn it into a legitimate business. And, you know, 9 years later, almost 10 here, it sounds like you have no regrets whatsoever, and yeah, there's only opportunities for more growth. So thank you very much for coming on and sharing your story with us.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk about bitters.
Thanks for listening to Beyond the Shelf, presented by Chef's Guest. If you enjoyed today's episode, please don't forget to rate us and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your episodes. For more details about all of our episodes from inside the ever-changing food and beverage industry, visit chefsbest.com.